the Nightcap here on VSiN. Happy to be with you. I'm Jeff Barles in for Tim Murray tonight. Our guy JVT with us in 5 minutes' time. In the meantime, we'll do some quick updates in Major League Baseball. We have a situation presenting ourselves in Kansas City. Royals led this game 7-0 after four. Toronto has climbed back in to make it 7-5. And with two outs in the top of the ninth, there are two men on, two men out, and Vlad Guerrero Jr. is at the dish. Guerrero's already hit one over the fountain in left center at Kauffman, which is quite a shot. So a big opportunity for Vlad Jr. We'll keep you apprised as it goes. Scott Barlow ahead 1-2 on Vlad Guerrero Jr. Barlow trying to go for a six-out save tonight for Kansas City, with Greg Holland unavailable after throwing a lot of pitches the previous 2 days against the Angels. So we'll see if Vlad Jr. can come up with a magical moment down the stretch here in Kansas City. Only other two baseball games going right now. One is in Oakland, East Bay action. The A's against the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers coming off a really good series against the Houston Astros over the week. Now in Oakland for four, Manaea and Skubal, the pitching matchup tonight, totals 8.5, -175 consensus closing favorite, the A's were. Oakland 2, Detroit Tigers 1, Stephen Piscotty's gone yard for his second homer of the year. And the big news of this game, Akil Baddoo, who has been arguably one of the best players in the American League so far, the Rule 5 draft pick, is hitless so far, but he is at the dish right now. So Baddoo might have a shot there to continue that hit streak that he's on to begin the season. And now also one of the bigger dogs of the day so far, if not the biggest. Yep, they were. They ended up being the biggest closing dog because the Phillies did not play the Mets today. +240 closing consensus dog the Colorado Rockies were against the LA Dodgers. Austin Gomber, Julio Urias, the pitching matchup. Homer by Ryan McMahon. Homer by Garrett Hampson for the Rockies, who are trying to avoid an 0-for road trip away from Coors Field. And, well, things just changed there. Justin Turner, three-run homer. Not into the nachos tonight, not like last night. A three-run jack for Turner, and the Dodgers have taken a 3-2 lead in the bottom of the third against Austin Gomber and the Colorado Rockies. How long is it until we get the Los Angeles Dodgers are the best team, gunning for the best team ever articles? When does that occur? That's got to be coming at some point. If they win tonight, they're 11-2 to begin the season. They play the Padres this weekend in San Diego, which will be their first real big test of this season. They swept Washington. They handled Colorado and Oakland pretty easily, and handling Colorado again. Do we have a line on tomorrow night's game yet for the Dodgers? And yes, we do. Dodgers with Bueller and Weathers tomorrow in San Diego, -155. Dodgers, your short shot. I'm not in the camp of being less than $4 or $5 this early in the season for World Series odds. But the Dodgers at +350 actually feels like that's a bet you could make right now and not feel too bad about yourselves. Because they are just so much better than everybody else. There is an embarrassment of riches on that team. Complete embarrassment of riches, offensively and pitching-wise. They're so good. They're so deep. And it's a scenario where even though they're, again, it is April 15th. It is 13 games as of today into their season. +350 is very short. But I have no problem with you taking a dot. Again, they are so clearly the best team, and they should be about +350 right now. The Yankees should not be that short. They shouldn't be the second favorite. That's pretty clear that they have some issues at +550 for New York, second in the odds at DraftKings. Our guy JVT is moments away to talk the association next here on the Nightcap. We'll be right back. It is the nightcap here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles in for Tim Murray tonight. But usual night for our guy JVT. Of course, our senior NBA analyst. Of course, also the host of Hardwood Handicappers on network. And filling in for Matt Humans this week as Humans plays golf in Hawaii on My Guys in the Desert. JVT, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Good, man. You know, sweating out this Celtics-Lakers game, looking around at the draft props that are available for the draft coming up in 2 weeks, so just kicking it.
Did you, by the way, since you're in for Humans this week, did you get in on the Humans prop bet for what he would shoot in Hawaii at golf? Did you get in on that, JVT?
I did not. I did get in on the pictures that he would put up on Instagram, though. So breakfast picture and something relatively inappropriate did cash. So.
Oh, I was going to say that the odds on what was posted was about, you had to lay about $15 on that, and that cashed for sure JVT. Let's get into, I want to ask you about your power ratings you put out today, because you had Phoenix at number one. What was the rationale for the Suns at number one, and just long-term for Phoenix now, a month away from the playoffs, their staying power through a Western Conference gauntlet, potentially, JVT?
Yeah, look, so power rankings a little different than power ratings, right? Power rankings generally, for those who are watching, it's more about recency, about how they're performing as of late. And this is a Suns team that comes into tonight who have won 10 out of 11 games. They're playing better than pretty much anybody. They're taking the regular season extremely seriously. Now, from a cover perspective, they've only covered 6 of those games. We'll see if they can do it tonight against the Sacramento Kings. But just in terms of the way they've been playing, Jeff, like, it's hard to put anybody ahead of them considering the length of consistency they've had up to this point in the regular season. As far as championship goes and, like, postseason goes, I have my reservations. Like, I don't really love the bench that much. I do think that there is something to be said that we have a very recent history of teams who take the regular season very seriously, not really panning out in the postseason, whether that is too much effort in the regular season, whether it's contenders truly know the value of the regular season, which is, that's really not that valuable. It's just get to the postseason and we can win some of these games. But I just think there's also some flaws to the way that they play. You know, I don't love teams that operate from mid-range primarily as an offense. The Phoenix Suns are a team that ranks 7th in terms of frequency of mid-range attempts. They're 1st in terms of mid-range shooting. Chris Paul is a dynamo within mid-range. Devin Booker scores in mid-range. But that's an area of the floor that's getting ruled out for a reason. And so that kind of worries me. You know, they're a fine three-point shooting team, but they're not a high-volume three-point shooting team. You know, those are the kind of small things that turn me off with the Phoenix Suns. So they're going to be a really competitive team, and I don't think by any stretch they're going to be an easy out for any single one of these teams that I have ahead of them in the Western Conference. But if we're talking about, like, hey, give me your top four teams to win the West, they'd be third, but they'd only be third because Jamal Murray tore his ACL, you know? So I think that's kind of where I'm at with them at this point.
JVT, I want to talk about basically the Murray injury. Of course, just horrible to see on Monday, the torn ACL, another big injury in a truncated schedule. But the biggest ramification from the Murray injury for a team that was in Denver was for the Lakers, who look like they're going to be in that 4-5 unless if they get hot, if LeBron and AD come back and play a good chunk of time. Again, 4 games behind the Clippers for the 3 seed, so it would take a lot for them to get out of that 4-5 with Denver. Just having a first-round matchup now without Murray there, JVT, how much does that, again, not only aid them in this first series, which it obviously does, but how much does it aid their path to make it back to the finals with having a lesser first-round opponent than it would have been even just 5 days ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty obvious, right, like how much this really helps. I think, like, the one thing, Jeff, that I have kind of a problem with evaluating what Denver is, the factor that we really don't know a lot about at this point right now, mainly because the sample size is so small, is Aaron Gordon's presence, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the other day on My Guys in the Desert, we put up some of the numbers, we put a graphic together about what Denver looks like without Jamal Murray on the court. A negative 0.5 net rating, you know, as of the day that he had torn his ACL. Defensive rating about 113.9, offensive rating about 113.3. But the problem is that Aaron Gordon's minutes don't really factor a lot into those numbers. You know, I think a lot of people would be surprised. You take Jamal Murray off the court, you put Nikola Jokic on the court, that net rating actually went to negative 2.8. They were really poor in those minutes. But again, Aaron Gordon kind of factoring in how much does he provide. And so I think, you know, that's kind of the factor that I have some trouble with going forward in terms of how good can Denver be or how bad can Denver be. You know, they handled Miami in the first game without Jamal Murray relatively easily, but Miami is a really poor offensive team. We've seen that consistently throughout the year. I would say in general, though, that the Nuggets, if they take on the Lakers and the Lakers are at full health, the Lakers are going to win that series. How comfortably they win that, I'm not entirely sure, because Aaron Gordon does provide a defensive wing to at least get in front of LeBron, right, to handle a LeBron type. And that's something like a Utah doesn't really have. It's actually something that a Phoenix doesn't have, which ties into maybe why they're so low in the betting market. So I want to say that the Lakers would win that series, and I'd say probably at about six. But I do want to watch these games really closely with just Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon and the rest of the supporting cast to see what this Nuggets team looks like, because we just don't know really a lot about them yet.
Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT, with us right now here on the Nightcap. Of course, get John on the tweets, at me, JVT. Of course, his podcast, Hardwood Handicappers, out right now. And also our senior NBA analyst here at VSiN. John, just looking at the Western Conference as a whole, you said Phoenix was your number three team there to possibly come out of the conference. Who do you have as number one and number two, just in the specific order? The Lakers still at the top for you, even with the injury questions with LeBron and AD and seeing how well they come back to health?
You know, so it has been tied at the top between the two LA teams for a while for me now. Mm-hmm. But I am ready to make it known to the world that I think this Clippers team is going to come out of the Western Conference.
All right.
I thought they were going to come out of the West last year, so we can take that with a grain of salt, right? We know what happened last season. But when you look at the way that this team is constructed, Jeff, like, there's a lot to like about this Clippers team. They're the number one three-point shooting team in the league by far, like in terms of three-point percentage. They are now starting to play a very good quality of defense in the second half of the season since the All-Star break, sixth-best team in terms of defensive efficiency. And this is all, by the way, while dealing with all of these injuries that they themselves have been dealing with, right? The Lakers, they get a lot of credit for treading water at this point right now. But let's not forget, Serge Ibaka has missed 16 consecutive games, right? Patrick Beverley has now going to be out for about 4 or 5 weeks dealing with this hand issue that he had to go under surgery. Paul George is dealing with a chronic toe injury that all indications are for that to fully heal, he needs at least 3 months off, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. Like, this is a team that is actually banged up themselves, but they play basketball the right way. I like their three-point shooting. They have a star that can operate offensively in the mid-range in Kawhi Leonard. They address the issue at point guard a little bit in Rajon Rondo. And so I just think when I look at it overall, and I don't think there's a big gap between them and the Los Angeles Lakers, I'll make that clear. But at this point right now, when they're so even, to me, what is the edge? And to me, it finally just comes down to, as a team, the Clippers can just shoot and the Lakers can't. And in today's day and age, that's going to be a difference. And look, they are 4-2 against the Lakers over the last two seasons. You know, I think we tend to forget that. They do have a winning record against the Lakers in the regular season. So, again, we'll see this play out. It's not a massive edge, but I do think that the Clippers are the better team in the Western Conference. I think they make it out of there outside of the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, there you go. There's your noteworthy thing from this, JVT, on the Clippers to get out of the West as of today. I don't disagree with you. I was in the same camp as you last year. I thought they were coming out of the West, and then the epic choke job against Denver in that second round, JVT. And look, they having that extra year together with Kawhi and Paul George, I'm talking myself into following you here, JVT. I'm talking myself into it.
Well, and, you know, I think there's something to be said, right? Like, it's pretty clear there was some, like, locker room chemistry, yes, type issues with that team, right? Jovan Buha wrote that great piece about them after the season, about the locker room dynamics, about how that wasn't gelling. Kawhi Leonard has seemingly taken on more of a vocal role as a leader, you know, playing in back-to-backs when he can and not dealing with injuries. Paul George kind of coming out and talking about the, you know, hey, no more excuses. They're saying all the right things. They're kind of walking in the right steps. So we'll see if this kind of works as they move forward. But it does seem like, at least from a chemistry standpoint, it's at least evened out here a little bit with them. And that seemed to really weigh them down last year.
JVT, I want to go to a market that's available at DraftKings right now. They have the to reach the playoff market, which is to make the actual bracket, not make the play-in games. And Memphis right now, who's currently sitting in the 8th seed, a game clear of Golden State for said 8th seed, JVT, there, yes, right now is sitting at +130. Is that worth a shot?
No, I'd want a little bit more, I think, with Memphis. And they're in the proper position to do so, but there is a, you know, there's a team that's a little farther down that is actually not even in the graphic right there that I think is going to make a little bit of a run here. And they were actually making a run when they were healthy, but they started to get banged up. And that's the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. You know, the Pelicans, right before Zion Williamson, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram started to get really banged up, you know, they had won 4 out of 5 games. Their offense continues to be one of the best in the NBA. And defensively, they've started to even things out a little bit here. But I think when you look at the rest of their schedule and the way it pans out for them, I think the schedule falls well there for the New Orleans Pelicans to stay within that play-in situation. And then you can find yourself, you know, in a situation where you can win in there. You know, I think the San Antonio Spurs, Jeff, they have in the second half really fallen off. They were a team in the first half. They were a top 10 defensive team. But I kept talking about this, wrote about it a couple of times, like, This is a team that was 23rd in defensive efficiency. At some point, this is going to fall off, and sure enough, they really have, and they've hit a little bit of a hard time, and they've bounced back the last few games, but the Pelicans, I think, are in a position to make a little bit of a run and make themselves known in the play-in situation. So that was the one where I was looking at all of them, and I think if you could still get in the range of, like, plus the, you know, 300, 320, somewhere like that, that would be a price worth investing in to me if we were talking about to make the playoffs in the Western Conference.
Can I interest you in $4, JVT, to make the playoffs?
Yes. Yeah, there it is. Yes, $4. I'm in. Yeah. And look, the injuries kind of hurt, right? Because the first time when I wrote about this and talked about it, you know, they were playing really good basketball, and the injuries really set them back a little bit. So they are a little bit more behind the eight ball. But still, once they are back together again, which they are starting to get to, they're going to start to turn things around again.
So, JVT, last night we had Kurt Heelan on the program, covers the league for NBC, has votes for these awards. And when we brought up the Rookie of the Year market, and when we said Anthony Edwards was favored, it was just shock that LaMelo Ball was not favored. And Kurt went on to say, talking with a few voters, that voters feel that LaMelo has done enough to win that award, even with only playing what would be the tied for the least amount of percentage played games in the history of the award. So, John, would you take a shot at that $2 still on LaMelo?
Hell yeah. I'm actually sitting back and waiting. So the second LaMelo got injured, my process, the second it happened, Jeff, I said two things. One, he's going to win it still. And two, I'm betting it. I just wanted to wait. I want to sit back and I want to wait until the very last minute, because to me at least, and it's starting to even back out, his odds can only get worse, right? You know, as Correct. We sit here right now, he's not going to do anything to improve his odds. So I'm just going to wait until the end of the regular season to bet it. I personally think he has won or has done enough to do it. You know, you mentioned the past Rookie of the Year, if I remember correctly, right? It was Patrick Ewing, I think, who did it. It was one of those. And Vince Carter, who also, I think, played in about 50 games when he won Rookie of the Year at an 82-game schedule. So we've seen it in the past. And again, you know, I think what's funny is, one, we look at all the rookies. I wouldn't even have Anthony Edwards as the second best rookie here, right? Like, if we're going in that regard, if we're automatically eliminating LaMelo Ball, I would have Tyrese Halliburton then as a favorite over Anthony Edwards. I think Edwards gets the status of odds on favorite because he was the first overall pick. We tend to forget then the first 30 games, he shot 37% from the floor, right? Barely averaged 2 rebounds a game. It was one of the most inefficient players in the league. And so I think, like, we kind of get lost in this whole entire deal of, hey, he's a top overall pick. He's got to be Rookie of the Year, right? When that's not necessarily the case. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. The second LaMelo got injured, I still felt he was going to win Rookie of the Year. I still feel it right now. And I'm just sitting back and I'm waiting until the end of the season, maybe hopefully get over $2 plus $2.15, whatever it is. I think he has cemented his status as Rookie of the Year for this season.
Our guy JVT with us right now here on the Nightcap. John, we got about 2 minutes left here, and I want to ask you just about the Brooklyn Nets. We still haven't really seen the big three fully in action. LaMarcus Aldridge having to retire today because of a health concern and a regular heartbeat that happened over a week ago, and he steps aside. Are we certain that Brooklyn should be this surefire favorite to come out of the East and be the favorite to win the NBA title?
I think at the price, no, right? Like, they shouldn't be this short of a favorite. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to bet in any space of Brooklyn, it should be to bet against them. You know, the sportsbook that you're currently sitting at, you can lay well under $3 for them not to win the title. That's a really good value play. Now, I still have them as the highest power-rated team in the NBA, and that's a lot of that is based on projection. We have seen the big three together. But in terms of where they're currently priced, that is too short. But I think, Jeff, when you've seen them together, when you're talking about, you know, the big three playing together, their net rating when they're all on the floor, an offensive rating of well over 124, a net rating of about plus 14, plus 15. Like, there's a lot of talent there, and they all fit together. You know, none of the cliche about there's only one basketball. They fit really well together, but they're in danger of being the team we just talked about at the beginning of the segment, to bring it back full circle, Los Angeles Clippers from last year, who had no continuity going into the postseason and ended up blowing it up in the second round. So I can understand all of the trepidation. So if you're looking to bet against them, or excuse me, bet in any space, it's to play against them. I still think they could put it together, but the numbers are way too short for them at this point right now, given what we haven't seen at this point.
And no, I agree with you. If pieced together correctly, they should win the NBA title. But I looked at Clipper analogy. I don't disagree with that, especially with the limited action that the three of them, KD, Kyrie, and Harden, will have together by the time that the playoffs wrap around. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. Get him on the tweets at MeJVT. Check out his podcast, Hardwood Handicappers. He's our senior NBA analyst here at VSiN, and he's also filling in for Matt Humans on My Guys in the Desert this week, which you can hear weekdays at 5 o'clock Eastern Time. JVT, thank you as always, buddy. It's always fun to catch up with you.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Doing a good job.
Thank you, JVT. Appreciate it, as always. Coming up next, we are going to update you on what's going on in L.A. and what's going on in Phoenix. The Suns getting all they can handle from the Sacramento Kings so far. We tell you what's going on next here on the Nightcap. Welcome back in here on VSiN Live at Circa. I'm Jeff Parles in for Tim Murray on the Nightcap. Happy to be with you. Giant video screens behind me. I know. A lot of fun behind me. A lot of colors, a lot of movement, but happy to be here. Always love doing the shows out of this brand new studio at this palace that Derek Stevens and company built just off of Fremont Street here in lovely downtown Vegas. Quick in-game updates. First off, we did not tell you what the conclusion was in Kansas City tonight. That is final, and the Kansas City Royals are 7-4. They beat the Blue Jays as a slight home favorite tonight, caused about minus 118 at DraftKings, minus 109 out here at Circa. 7-5 the final. Vlad Guerrero Jr. in his last at bat with the chance to give Toronto the lead. Struck out swinging. Big job by Scott Barlow. I got to give Kansas City credit. Look, that was one of my preseason win total bets over, betted over 73.5. I thought Kansas City was at least had enough pieces to be competitive. So far, so good. The other big season win total I had, Boston Red Sox under 80.5. That's a big thumbs down at the moment after a big thumbs up to begin the season with that sweep that they took at the hands of the lowly Orioles the first weekend, but the Red Sox, of course, have now won 9 out of the last 10 after that bad opening weekend. The other two games going through 5.5 in Oakland, 3-2, A's in front as a favorite against the Tigers, 6 good innings from Sean Manaea, needed this after a rough outing his last time out, 6 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned, 7 Ks, only one gopher ball tonight for Manaea. That was just earlier this inning to Brandon Goodrum. No, 3-2 Oakland, 5.5 complete at the Coliseum in the East Bay. At first of 4 for the Tigers and the A's. Julio Urias has really settled in. 4 strong so far at home at Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers looking to get to 11-2. A 3-2 lead as they play in the top of the 5th inning against Colorado. Again, Justin Turner. Not into the nachos tonight. 408-foot dead center, 3-run jack against Austin Gomber to give the Dodgers, again, a huge favorite yet again. Shocker, shocker that the Dodgers are a huge favorite again. minus 300 consensus closing favorite. So the Dodgers in command up 3-2 in that one. By the way, we'll get to this later in the program. Jacob DeGrom start got postponed because of rain in New York today. He'll be in Colorado. That's going to be a very big test for the Coors cocktail that I like to play of betting blindly the first five over and the full game over, because the forces of DeGrom and the Mets offense when DeGrom pitches will make that tough. That's a 9.5 right now. I don't think I've ever seen a single digit to Coors. That's amazing. And it's Chichi Gonzalez on the other side. It's not even like it's a good pitcher for Colorado going on the other side. But we'll talk about that later in the program when we go through tomorrow's card at the end of the show, about an hour from now. So stay tuned for that. The two NBA games going. Give Sacramento credit. They're at least hanging in. Down 5 with 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. 84-79. 21 points for Devin Booker. 20 for Buddy Hield. Sacramento hanging in, despite Phoenix shooting 64% from the field so far, and Sacramento shooting pretty well as well, 56% and 55% from three. So that's your path for Sacramento hanging in against Phoenix so far tonight. Devin Booker on his way to going over his point total, needing after a bucket now, needing five more. And the other one on your screen that's already gone over, Buddy Hield is over his 15.5 in the third quarter with 20 and 5 3-pointers already for the Oklahoma product, Buddy Hield. 86-79, Phoenix in front, 5 minutes and change to go in the third quarter. The only other game going right now, the Lakers at home against the Boston Celtics. The Lakers down 13 at the break, 61-48, 21 first half points, a 9-10 shooting for Jaylen Brown, so a huge game for him. Talon Horton Tucker, the leading scorer for the Lakers with 12. If you want it in game, Lakers getting 13, so it's second half pick with a total of 216.5. By the way, Phoenix laying 11.5 right now, up 7 with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, with that total way above what it closed at. Now at 245.5, Laker total at 216.5 if you want it right now at most spots. When we get back, there are rule changes coming in the Atlantic League, Major League Baseball experiments in that league. We're going to talk about two of those rules that could have a big impact on how we handicap baseball if it comes to MLB. That's next on the Nightcap. The spring sports betting action is just getting started, and our VSiN experts are covering early season baseball trends, NHL and NBA playoff races, plus we're looking at all the key picks and predictions in the NFL draft. We have all the tools that you need to make the most out of every bet, including our 24/7 live video coverage, odds and analysis for every game on VSiN.com, our daily members-only best bet emails, and in-depth coverage of every major event in Point Spread Weekly. The weather and the betting action, it's heating up now. So get in on the action today. Sign up for a VSiN 10-day free trial exclusively at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. I'm Jeff Barles. Happy to be with you tonight. I'm in for Tim Murray. Be here tomorrow as well. John Jansen of Fox Sports The Gambler in Philadelphia. He hosts a line change for that radio station from 8 to 11 Eastern time. He'll be with us at the lovely time of midnight Eastern. So be on the lookout for JJ coming up in about 30 minutes from now. But I want to go over something. And Aaron Oster and I, our producer Aaron, chatting before the show as always and during breaks about the Atlantic League. And you may be thinking, Jeff, why? Why are you talking about an independent league And their new rules, which you'll see on your screen in a few seconds here, which here's why we're talking about this, guys. Major League Baseball used the Atlantic League as basically its guinea pig. This is where the rule that we all love to hate in extra innings, where you put the runner on second to begin the inning and go from there. That's an Atlantic League rule. Robot umpires, that's an Atlantic League rule. That was the experimentation that Major League Baseball has done. And as you see on your screen, three new rules this year. The bottom one, the automated umpire system with a two-dimensional strike zone, and same thing as robot umps. I'm not really concerned about that. The top two is where I'm concerned. The first one I don't think will have as big of an impact as some may think. So the first one, as you see on the top of your screen, pitching rubber moved from the traditional, again, over 120 years of baseball, 60 feet, 6 inches, moved back a foot to 61 feet, 6 inches, I should say. I don't think that has that big of an impact. Maybe brings the velocity down on hard fastballs a mile per hour or two, but it also adds more break to breaking balls. So I think I don't think that's going to have as big of an impact as people think it may. But the second one is very interesting. And with the universal DH on the table and Major League Baseball using it as a bargaining chip for the upcoming CBA that needs to be negotiated with the players union, this may be a compromise that we see, which is called the double hook rule. So we have universal DH here. This would mean the DH comes into the NL, but it's not really the universal DH. It's not guaranteed through the whole game in this. When the starting pitcher is removed from the game, the designated hitter, he gone too. The pitcher would go in the designated hitter slot. So there's a few thoughts that came out of this. First off, I think it's a ridiculous rule. That's just me. I don't like it. I think it's dumb. If you're going to go to universal DH, just put the thing in. Either do it the whole way or don't do it. Like you have now, the old school NL rules. By the way, I used to be team, let the pitchers hit. Moments like Bartolo Colon hitting a home run in a major league game, can't match those moments. But after seeing it last year, I'm on camp. Let's get the DH in quickly as possible. You can get better. The game is more fun. You don't need pitchers hitting anymore. It's not 1965 anymore. We don't need it. This rule, the double hook rule, I think satisfies two things. One, it satisfies the purist of, oh, I don't want the DH in both leagues. All right, you get the DH in the NL, but not really. As soon as the pitcher's removed, it's back to NL baseball. So you still need your bench depth and so on and so forth. But the other thing, and I got to give Aaron credit here for coming up with this, and I agree with him. From a wagering perspective, what it does do is it doesn't do much for the better, but it helps out books where the chaos of last year, especially books that still list pitchers like the book behind us here at Circa, I know FanDuel does as well. It at least allows you to more than likely eliminate the opener in the National League. And the American League will stay. The Rays are obviously an American League team, the team that did it the most of anyone. That stays. But it at least makes, you're going to have lines that don't have to disappear in the middle of the day. You're not going to have lines for places that don't list pitchers now have to move a line 35 cents like they did plenty of times a year ago. But to me, from a baseball perspective, this is just a dumb rule. Why do we want more pitchers and why hitting in the game? Which in the double hook rule, you get a long extra inning game in the National League, you can have a critical at bat coming. Again, we'll see if the extra inning rule stays in past this year. I hope it doesn't. I have a feeling probably will, because I think teams like the fact that their pitchers aren't going to have to be used as much, and you're not going to have a guy having to pitch six innings out of the bullpen when you don't want him to have to. But this double hook rule, though, there's only so much you can take when the powers that be in Major League Baseball, Oh, we're going to tinker with this. Oh, we're going to tinker with that. Oh, we're going to put a runner on second base for extra inning. Oh, we're going to make pitchers face three batters when they come into the game out of the bullpen. By the way, I like that rule. I have no issue with that. I'm good with that. But the double hook rule, we're just trying too hard here. We're trying too hard. Just put the darn DH in the game in both leagues. It's okay. You flip most of the purists at this point. And you know what? You create more jobs too. A stable DH in the NL means more players getting jobs. More hitters keeping jobs in NL ballparks. I mean, I'm sure the Nats would be thrilled to be able to have Kyle Schwarber DH. I'm sure the Mets would love to be able to DH Pete Alonso and put a left fielder in left field and put Dom Smith at first base. I'm sure the Braves would love to be able to give Freddie Freeman a day off and keep him in the lineup to let him only hit. It's time. None of this double hook stuff. I don't like it. I don't like it. Hey, come on. Just have the DH all together. Don't do the, once your starter's done, your DH is done too. I don't like that. If you were to do that in the National League. Coming back, the Phoenix Suns. They deserve our respect. And should Brooklyn be this short? That's next here on the Nightcap. When you're hiring, there's no luxury of time. So instead of waiting for people to see your sponsored post, invite them to apply. More at indeed.com/credit. The show is the Nightcap. I'm Jeff Parles. Aaron Oster, our producer, came in during the break and was talking to me about the double hook rule. And I will say this, because Aaron brought up a point of maybe they're targeting the Tampa Bay Rays. Maybe this is a thing for all of baseball. If Major League Baseball goes from DH in the AL for 50 years now, basically, to making AL teams do this, there will be a fit from American League teams. I hope they don't make this a universal thing if they were to do this double hook rule, which again, if you're just joining us and saying, hey, what in the world is Parles talking about? It's in the Atlantic League, which is basically the guinea pig league for Major League Baseball now when they want to try these new rules. The double hook rule is going to be your starting pitch. There's a DH at the beginning of the game. But as soon as your starting pitcher is removed, the pitcher goes into the DH spot. So basically what it would do would basically mean that your DH has to bat ninth or eighth, basically. And you can't really DH your good players. You have to make the play to feel like they do in the NL right now. I think it's dumb. I think it's extraordinarily dumb. It's another one in a long line of dumb ideas that we have seen from this regime in Major League Baseball. The only one that I don't mind of this new baseball that they're trying is I do not mind the three batter rule for relief pitchers. I don't mind that. That is the only thing I'm okay with. I'm okay with making relief pitchers have to get both sides of the plate out. No problem with that. Become a better pitcher if you want to be an effective major league reliever. Fine with me. Other than that, I hate the guy put on second base and extra inning rules. I hate this double hook DH rule. And the one that we're still waiting on, it's time for the robot umps, guys. Let's go. Enough already. Enough already with inconsistencies on strike zones. Enough. So we'll leave it at there. We might even ask John Jansen, the host of The Line Change on Fox Sports, The Gambler, who's going to be with us in a little less than 20 minutes, about 15 minutes, actually, for JJ to be on the program. Well, let's get to the NBA. Two games still going right now. One of them involves a team that I'm about to praise, and that said team is doing something that it should not be doing right now. The Phoenix Suns, who are 12.5-point closing favorite tonight against the Sacramento Kings, losing by a point early fourth quarter. So I got to give the Kings credit after getting embarrassed at home last night by a Wizards team that was a road favorite and covered. On the road, leading Phoenix in the fourth quarter. pretty impressive from Sacramento, who's well out of things. Again, Phoenix needs a win to get within a game of the one seed in the West. Utah, of course, still holding the one seed. And the other game still going. The Los Angeles Lakers have got it to 7. So the Lakers, who closed 8, now down 7. A halftime line of 13.5. Lakers so far covering that second half. Down 7, 82-75, 3 minutes to go, third quarter. Again, it's a Jaylen Brown night for Boston, 25 for the University of California product tonight. Well, let's get back into the NBA, though. Let's get back into these futures markets here real quick. The Phoenix Suns deserve your respect, despite the fact that they're only beating Sacramento by 1 right now. Phoenix currently, if they win tonight, will be 1 game behind Utah for the 1 seed. They have a great backcourt in Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They play great defense. Their bench is a question, like our guy JVT said, and they're also playing as well as anyone right now. As you see on your screen, odds from DraftKings. Phoenix right now, odds on to win the Pacific, which they should be, right now as they are playing right now. In progress, a game and a half clear of the Clippers. If they win, they'll be 2 clear. 9-1 to win the West. That was about 12-1 before the Jamal Murray injury earlier this week. And 20-1 to win the title. To me, the only thing that is holding Phoenix back from being this public, true competitor here is the lack of experience for this group. This group, obviously, the Suns have not been in the playoffs in nearly a decade. They've been a bad team for a long time. They won 8 in a row in the bubble in Orlando last year, and it still wasn't enough to get in the play-in game even. Memphis beat them out still. But there's something about this team, at least defensively, even though tonight they haven't been good defensively against Sacramento. And of course, ironically, this is happening when the Kings are beating them in the fourth quarter right now. But the Suns, to me, have all the pieces to make an NBA Finals. Maybe not beat Brooklyn if the Nets have it all figured out by the time they get there. But they have the pieces to get out of the West. Look at what we're talking about of Phoenix having to beat on this road. An untrustworthy 7 seed if they get it against Dallas right now. I don't trust Dallas to win a playoff series. And Phoenix is just better than them. The Clippers, who look, JVT likes the Clippers to get out of the West right now. And I don't necessarily disagree with him. But the Clippers are gettable. And they still have to outrun their history. The Clippers have never even made the Western Conference Finals in their history. We saw what happened to them a year ago. One of the most epic chokes we have ever seen in a playoff series against Denver. And then a Western Conference Final. Again, if the Lakers are healthy, the Lakers are coming out of the West, guys. I do still think that. But LeBron off a high ankle sprain. AD with an Achilles. Again, not a tear, but still an Achilles is an Achilles. Going to be cautious with that. By the way, it looks like Anthony Davis may return on Saturday and play 15 minutes, which would be a great thing for LA. And a Utah team that has not shown us in the playoffs at any point. I don't care that Phoenix hasn't shown us yet. They have the pieces. They have the makeup of a team that can make an NBA Finals and maybe even win the darn thing. By the way, Phoenix just retook the lead. Or actually, now that game's tied now at 99 at home against Sacramento. But Phoenix is really good. And if you can find double digits, and the double digits to win the West are disappearing quickly, and they should, but even 9-1 still, I think that's worth a play. That is worth a play on Phoenix. Again, I have 50. I got about 12-1, I should say, not 15. I got 12-1 on Phoenix to win the West a few weeks ago. I like my ticket a whole lot. And especially if they get the one seed, I'd rather get the Lakers earlier than later this year. Because they may not be fully back to what they will be in the second round. And heck, look, even though Jamal Murray is out, it's not impossible Denver beats them. It's highly unlikely. And I think Phoenix matches up pretty darn well with Denver, all things considered, especially with Jamal Murray out of the mix. But Phoenix deserves your respect right now. And they still aren't getting, even look what Kurt Heelan told us last night. When talking to people in the league, yeah, we want to draw the Suns. I don't get it. I know the Western Conference is a gauntlet, but I'd still rather see Utah. And I would be equally as scared of Phoenix as I am of the Clippers right now. I know the Clippers have the elite, the better duo, but that history is a lot to overrun. And look, and I know it's year to year and it's a different year and all that fun jazz, but it's still the Los Angeles Clippers. But Phoenix deserves your respect. And if you can get 9-1, 10-1 to win the West, I think that's well worth it still, which you still can get right now. One other thing, too, as you look at the Eastern Conference, the flip over there real quick, you shouldn't have to lay a price with Brooklyn right now. I would not do it at all. And look, I understand that the Nets are, when healthy and together with the big three playing, they are at 125 points per 100 possessions, which is ridiculous. That is a ridiculous number on them. But are we sure they're going to have enough cohesion by the time that they get to the playoffs? They might legitimately play like five games together at this rate. And what we saw with the Clippers last year, when you put a team together for a first playoff run, you can have your issues. Again, I know LeBron and Bosh and Wade and the Miami Big Three made the finals every year they were together. I know that. I understand. Won two titles in year two and three. Quite frankly, should have won the first year as well. Sorry, Mavs fans. But Brooklyn, to me, I have no problem with them being the favorite to win the NBA championship. I have no problem with that. And I have no problem with them being the Eastern Conference favorite. But when you see, at least in the East odds, when you see Philadelphia at about 5-1 to win the Eastern Conference, 11-1 to win the title right now at DraftKings, and with Brooklyn at least lacking depth interior-wise, especially after today with LaMarcus Aldridge abruptly announcing his retirement because of an irregular heartbeat scare a few days ago, I would not lay that price with Brooklyn. Minus 106 right now at DraftKings. I would not do it. I would only bet Philadelphia. I don't trust Milwaukee. I don't think this. They're one of those. They're in the same deal as the Clippers. You got to show me first before fully trusting them. They haven't made the finals as this group. They choked against Toronto 2 years ago. They were clearly the worst team against Miami last year. Miami clearly better in that series and should have swept them, quite frankly. But for the Eastern Conference right now, Philadelphia's the only bet I'd make. It's kind of crazy to think. Again, the Sixers have their issues as well, but I would only bet Philadelphia right now to come out of the East. That would be the only bet. And again, could it be Lakers-Nets? Of course it can. That's still your most logical final combination. Or could the Nets win the whole thing? Yes, of course. When you have that talent, of course. They should still be the favorites to win the NBA title, but they should not be this short. I would not bet them right now. Philadelphia and Phoenix right now, the two teams that I would bet in their respective conferences to win those conferences, and maybe even a little bite of the apple on Philadelphia at 11-1 to win the title. Maybe. I probably like a little bit more. I probably like a little closer to about 15-1 on Philly before fully going after that. John Jansen, my guy out of Philly. I should have saved this for him. He wouldn't believe that I said that the Sixers would be the one team out of the East I would bet. He hosts The Line Change on Fox Sports The Gambler in Philadelphia. He's with us next to discuss basically everything. Early season baseball thoughts, NBA futures odds, and more. John Jansen, our guest next on a Nightcap.